hello, everyone. We are beginning here. I'm broadcasting here from Finland with the second part of the rays and the initiation. So far, we have completed 38 programs. Most of them more or less an hour in duration, sometimes a little short, sometimes a little long. I'm trying to avoid my marathon five-hour programs, which occasionally do appear. Anyway, we're discussing the building of the Antikorana and the movement from the many, from the three to the two to the one, and eventually after the great Mahapralaya, into what we can call the one, the none. And occasionally I'm filling in some of these abbreviations, if you can just be patient with me. My recent computer disaster, kind of a fried motherboard, put me in a disadvantageous position when it comes to using these time-saving abbreviations. So we're talking about Nirvana a little bit. We have been. We can function then eventually as the monad spirit, directly connected to form, and in direct rapport with the consciousness aspect. Interestingly, the mediating soul being absorbed into both of these two aspects of divine expression. So it's no longer simply the central principle and gives way to a duality. As it says here, it's not functioning as the middle factor. The three have become the two, and when this is achieved, the nature of Nirvana will be comprehended. Nirvana is not really something that anything but a master of the wisdom can fully comprehend, and the Nirvana of the sixth degree, I suppose, which was the Buddha's more ultimate Nirvana, since he is certainly a sixth degree initiate and taking part of the seventh degree already, just as the Christ has. So when we think about enlightenment, maybe at the third degree, it's not the Nirvana of the sixth degree, certainly not. And then this wonderful quote of what Nirvana is, the beginning of the endless way, comes from a book by Evans Wentz. It's about Tibetan yoga. So this is the way whereon duality is resolved into unity, the way that members of the hierarchy are seeking to tread, and for which they are preparing. It doesn't lie immediately ahead of us. Experience is more like the second and third degree are lying ahead of the disciples of the modern era, the true disciples. And as for the aspirants and probationers, even the first degree may lie ahead, but it is imminently possible given the stage at which humanity finds itself and the labors of hierarchy to facilitate the rapid initiation of humanity. So that's where we ended last time, page 483. And the initial step, the Tibetan goes on to say, towards bringing about this dualism is the building of the Antikorana. And sometimes we hear about the, sometimes we hear about the technique of duality. Of duality. I'll get that spelled right in a second. And that's another one of those words, TQ, We'll just use it that way. See if we can. TQ technique. Okay, the technique of duality. And we first hear about that when the Tibetan is discussing the methods of fusion in the book Esoteric Psychology, Volume 2. And then he hints at a technique of duality. Well, I cannot help but think that the Antikarana work leading to this kind of duality in which consciousness is absorbed into both poles is part of what he means by the technique of duality, but that book was written first, of course, and he did not get into the elaboration on the building methods of the Antikarana. So the initial step towards bringing about this dualism is the building of the Antikarana. And this is consciously undertaken, and there it is, only when the disciple is preparing for the second initiation. This is the statement. I knew I read it somewhere and have repeated it constantly. Nevertheless, this is a direct and definite statement about when this is undertaken. So I suppose, excuse me, many of the present disciples of the Tibetan teacher are first degree initiates, and the second degree is not lying so far ahead in the manner in which the masters count time. So the second degree has a strong scorpionic flavor to it. Well, so does the first and the third degree as well, but the second degree especially, and the hierarchical ruler is Mercury, and Mercury is the planet most involved in this building of the Antikarana. One has to be quite mentally focused, I think, to do this properly, but still have a proper command of the creative imagination. So there is spiritual mind is working at this stage, the illumined mind and spiritual intelligence. So let us remember this. Let us remember this, the time when this is really undertaken. And let us strive towards that stage of elevated consciousness whereby we can seriously begin this kind of work to make the link with our own personal consciousness, somewhat soul-infused, and the higher worlds of the spiritual triad, which are planetary in scope and which transcend the specific experience which the disciple has had in the three lower worlds. We're entering the world of the perception of the planetary logos in one of his extensions, whether as a chain lord or a globe lord. And so it is their experience that we are coming in contact with, and not so much that which we have worked up from below. As I have said, there are literally thousands. Well, does it seem like a big number? So preparing. So he's telling us that there are those who are nearing the second initiation. That number, of course, is small compared with those who are preparing for the first, because that's the big initiation to be taken by humanity in the near future, and when the Christ reappears, it will signal that the first initiation of humanity, obviously not of all human beings, the first initiation of humanity will be taken, or will have been taken. So thousands are so preparing because it can be assumed that all earnest and true aspirants who work undeviatingly, aspirants and disciples who work undeviatingly for spiritual advancement with pure motive and who are oriented unswervingly towards the soul have taken the first degree. These are some of the very important quotations which I have excised in my AAB extracts. And this is something to remember. It can be assumed that all earnest and true aspirants and disciples who work undeviatingly, that doesn't mean just now and then, for spiritual advancement with pure motive, which is selfless motive, not ambition, and who are oriented unswervingly towards the soul, have taken the first initiation. Well, look at those words. Undeviatingly and unswervingly. It sounds like continuity to me, doesn't it to you? So this is not simply the life of the aspirant where you pick and choose when you will aspire and when you will not, and are discontinuous in your aspiration. Here the aspiration is continuous, undeviating, unswerving. So this first degree connotes the birth, simply connotes the birth of the infant Christ within the heart. The first degree does involve the heart, although also the sacral center. The center which, the heart center is more powerfully involved even at the fourth degree. But this is a symbolic way of putting it. It connotes the birth of the infant Christ, the Christ consciousness, within the heart, speaking symbolically. So this is the Christ consciousness. And one begins to overcome separation, separativeness, and the unity of consciousness, realizing the union of the many lives in the energy of love, begins to dawn. There should be many who are preparing to begin this task of building the Rainbow Bridge under the influence of the Ageless Wisdom. Note, who under the influence of the Ageless Wisdom are grasping the necessity and the importance of the revelation which this process conveys. He says thousands, and what does he mean by many? Well, thousands are many, and no doubt since this was written, many more have equipped themselves for the task. And notice, there are various ways to build this bridge, but the expeditious, tried and tested methods are presented by the Ageless Wisdom. The Ageless Wisdom, AW, I will put that in here. Ageless Wisdom presents the technique. Presents the technique which, when followed, leads to success. So we have to spread this understanding far and wide so that people can indeed grasp the importance of the revelation which the process conveys and can convey. So often people do not attempt certain things because they don't realize the benefits which they will accrue if they attempt with undeviating and unswerving effort. So we have to present these possibilities so that indeed by the end of the 21st century, occultism may win the day. It's another way of saying the Ageless Wisdom will win the day. What I am here writing has therefore a definite and useful purpose. You know, this is not fanciful. And if you think about it, this was written 70 years ago, in the 40s. Maybe some of this in the early 40s. So more than 70 years ago. And now it certainly has to begin to come to fruition. There's so many things that disciples may occupy themselves with, but they are not necessarily the things which have the greatest benefit. Okay. Okay, different things come up. My task has been for a long time the giving out in book form. After all, DK is strongly Gemini in nature. That's a sign that he works with very strongly, it's obvious, as are so many of those who have worked most closely with him, Alice Bailey, Mary Bailey, Foster Bailey, SW as well, Marion Walter, strong Gemini component, as has Master KH and his disciple, the DK. I think they both have Gemini, but whereas Master KH has the sign Pisces prominent, I think for Master DK it may be another sign, maybe Taurus. My task has been for a long time the giving out in book form information anent concerning the next stage of intelligent and spiritual recognition for humanity. And, you know, with eager anticipation, we can look forward to that which is to transpire at and after 2025. How much have we assimilated? Perhaps the degree of assimilation will determine what Master DK can give in this series of bridging treatises between the science and understanding of the human being and the science and understanding of the masters. Therefore, again, the understanding of the method of building the Antikorana is essential if humanity is to move forward as planned. Goodness. It seems like such a remote and arcane process. And yet, if humanity is to move forward, it is essential. So we note that. Essential if humanity is to move forward. And let's see what that gives us. Yeah. Okay. And in this moving forward, the disciples and aspirants must and do form the vanguard. So there is the responsibility laid upon our shoulders, that this is something we cannot ignore. We cannot ignore the process and must make it useful and practical in our lives. Humanity will awaken steadily and as a whole to the incoming spiritual urge, and especially as we move towards towards, that's one of those words again, towards the first initiation. First initiation. Let's see if we can get that properly done. Yep, I think we can. Especially as we move towards the first initiation, which is imminent. The reappearance of the Christ is imminent in a sense, but it's not going to happen overnight because there are too many achievements which lie ahead and must precede the reappearance. Such achievements as the establishing of the masters and their disciples in the various world centers, and the looking toward those masters and their disciples for good advice by those who are in power. So a recognition of what the masters and their disciples represent, all that must precede the reappearance of the Christ. And so it's the reappearance of the Christ which will tell us that humanity has taken the first initiation. So we cannot think that the first initiation will occur immediately, just as we cannot think that the reappearance of the Christ will occur immediately. The hour, the time, they are known to him and some of the senior workers surrounding him, and it's more a question of the condition of the energy and forces within humanity and the globe that will determine the time of the reappearance, not a specific calendar date. So humanity will steadily awaken, and as a whole, it's a group process here. Finally, something will sweep across humanity, which will be in the nature of a kind of enlightenment, and they will follow the spiritual urge. We've had, of course, a spiritual urge very strongly present in some of the decades of the 20th century. One can question whether it has subsided and given in to more material concerns, but here he's talking about something of even greater scope and import. An overwhelming impulse towards spiritual life, overwhelming, and towards a major orientation will take place. That's not yet taking place, even though there are promising signs. We have so much more. We have to defeat selfishness in its worst forms, and it is not yet defeated. You know, the idea surrounding the reappearance of the Christ, the churches and all the religious institutions have to clean house. There has to be a certain measure of sharing, how much the masters will know, and a certain measure of peace. And look at the condition of warring humanity at the moment. Certainly, on the outer plane, there are evidences of this warring condition, and on the psychological plane, tremendous evidence of warfare. Just as the individual disciple has to reverse himself upon the wheel of life, often occurring at the fifth petal process, and tread the way counterclockwise, which means a reorientation of the energies within the human being's energy system, so must humanity, and so humanity will. Well, we are the world disciple, but let us say that as humanity, we have not yet definitely reversed the wheel. There are strong counterpoles, however, between those who are moving in the direction of reversal and those who are reactionary and still holding on to the bad old ways. The two-thirds who will make the goal of evolution in this world cycle, I guess he means round, or maybe entire, let's see how many, well, I suppose it's the fourth round and even some of the fifth are already beginning to do so. We have to contrast contrast two thirds with three fifths, because at the judgment day in the fifth round, the evolutionary goal of remaining on this planet as one who is treading the path will be achieved, and then two-fifths will be sent for other kinds of education elsewhere within our planetary scheme, and then eventually perhaps to another planetary scheme, perhaps Mars. This is the separation of the sheep from the goats. Mars represents the sheep, and Capricorn, the initiatory possibilities of those who remain on the Earth. But by world cycle, does he mean around? Let's ask that. Whoop. Okay, here it is. Does he mean a round, namely a chain round? (Clears throat) So we have to contrast the two-thirds with the three-fifths. Two-thirds is a little more, about six percentage points more. And this is a different kind of cycle, perhaps. Perhaps it's the two-thirds that have to make the gold in this round, the fourth, and in the fifth round, three-fifths. In the fourth round, so we will ask that question. Remember that we progress by the questions that we ask. We inquire the way, and even though we have to leave quite a few questions hanging for a fuller type of understanding to dawn, just stating them is the beginning of is an invocation of the answer. It is interesting, these generic terms like world cycle. They can be used in various ways. I've discussed this a little, all the way from representing, let us say, a root race or even a sub-race, to a round within a chain, to a round within a scheme. And who knows, maybe in respect to the solar logos, it can represent an entire Mahamanvantara. So it's a bit of a blind, and we have to know what he means by world cycle, judging from the context. In the process, however, the third divine aspect, that of the creative actor, comes into activity. Usually the third aspect of divinity is the first to unfold. Now, it's not necessarily the, well, yes, you know, we seem to operate on the premise that three goes to two goes to one. But in this particular case, the one and the two are present, and the third unfolds toward the end, the creative activity of the individual or of the group. It was so in the creative process where the tangible universe was concerned. It has to be backed up by the first and second aspect. But then it leads, the process leads around, you might say, one, two, three, two, one. It was so in the creative process where the tangible universe was concerned. It must also be when the individual disciple becomes the creating agent. We have to learn how to manipulate energies, forces, and different relationships according to the divine plan. For eons, he has built and has used his vehicles of manifestation in the three worlds. And we might say, you know, unconsciously. C-O-N-L. So this is, let's see how that would work. U-N-C-O-N-L, unconsciously. Okay, that's at first. Then came the time when advanced people began to create upon the mental plane. And this is the third ray, let's call it the third ray process of manipulation, making new combinations, as Master Moria would say. So third ray process of manipulation. They dreamed dreams. They saw a vision. They contacted intangible beauty, something from the soul. They touched the mind of God and returned to Earth with an idea. Well, if they were really advanced, this kind of influence arose from the spiritual triad if the people were really advanced. To this idea they gave form and became creators upon the mental plane, upon the mental, not planet, but plane. Creators upon the mental plane, they became artists in some form of creative effort. In the task of building the Antikorana, the disciple has to work also on mental levels, and that which he there constructs will be of so fine a substance that it may not and cannot appear on physical levels. This is the subtle bridge of light. So this is the story of how the creative capacity developed and attempted in a somewhat magical way to bring down the vision, the idea, the intangible something which he contacted in what were for him the higher worlds. Because of his fixed orientation, that which he builds will move upward towards the center of life and not downward towards the center of consciousness or toward light appearance. So we are building a bridge into the higher, into the less tangible worlds, the more ethereal worlds. And Antikorana can, in a way, be considered what's called here a fixed orientation, the fixed orientation of the bridge of light, and not something that is simply wavering and inconstant. Bridging is something that we human beings want to do because we want to get back together. We want all of the parts of our makeup to be working harmoniously and effectively with each other, but we are somewhat divided as we followed our emanative process down into the lower worlds. There are always places where bridges have to be made. I suppose, you know, if you look at the diagram, there's a bridge here to be made between the fourth subplane of the mental plane and the higher subplanes. There's a bridge to be made between the first subplane of the mental plane and the Buddhic plane. There is a, I suppose every time we enter a new plane, a bridge has to be made, but a significant one has to be made here on the upper levels of the atmic plane, or maybe it's on the third sublevel. Anyway, there is a vehicle there, we've been told, which is kind of like a causal body on the higher turn of the spiral. And a bridging process is needed as we move into the monad. And then when the monadic vehicle has served its purpose, there will be a liberation of something called alchemically a volatile essence, and a bridging will be made onto the logoic plane. And in the history of man, many types of bridgings did occur, from the physical to the etheric to the astral to the lower mental. So we ascend, we might be say this, we ascend through the process of bridging. And many of us know right now that we're trying to work our way through bridging into the world of the soul, but we have another curriculum which is operating at this time, and it requires a bridging into the spiritual triad. We're undertaking the curriculum of love simultaneously with the curriculum of will, and the Antikorana is our tool to reach the center of will, which is ultimately the monad, first Atma and then the monad. Well, okay, so So what is being said here, we have to give form to the ideas we touch. This is inherent in the magical process, even though at this point the individual worker does not have the formulas which would make his magic invariably effective, and become creators upon the mental plane, and artists, renderers of intangibles into form, those who render intangible contacts into denser form, and expressing these subtler energies. Okay, and there's another one of those little abbreviation words, energies. Okay. So the disciple has to work on mental levels, and there he's constructing something so intangible that it's hard to think of it as real in any lower sense. And it does not appear on denser physical levels, but he does have the fixed orientation, you know. And in a way, the horn of the unicorn represents such a fixed, subtle, occult orientation. That horn is a horn of higher sentiency. It's also a horn of power. It's also a weapon. There are many uses for that which the initiate develops as the horn of the unicorn. Well, anyway, because of his fixed orientation, that which he builds will move upward towards the center of life. What is that center of life? It is the monad. And not downward towards the center of consciousness. Presumably that is that can be the causal body or the mind, or towards light appearance, which is the personality per se. All right. Herein lies the difficulty for the beginner. He has, so to speak, to work in the dark. He cannot see, you know, he cannot register, he cannot see what he is building through imagination. He cannot see that which he is building according to the ancient, to the ancient rules. And he's not in a position to verify the existence of that which he is attempting to construct. So you can see that this is going to require a lot of faith, much faith in the system imparted will be needed. His physical brain is unable, because of its relative grossness, to register his creation as an accomplished fact. So we have to, as it were, take the Tibetan's word for it and follow out his system of building as if it will truly lead, inevitably, as he says it will, to certain results. He has to depend entirely upon the proof technique of the work outlined and to proceed by faith. Okay, well, the Tibetan is saying that. And here is where faith, even at a relatively high level of development, becomes so important, because it allows us to continue without doubt and without questioning, and to continue steadfastly rather than spasmodically according to the work we do. So will be the results achieved. And this is just such an important principle in occultism. We have to walk in the dark with faith, and our hand is in the hand of our guide, so to speak, whom we trust implicitly. He has given us every indication that he is completely trustworthy, for those who can understand what he has been imparting. These are difficulties, okay? This is a difficulty because you don't see the results of your building, not immediately. The only evidence of success may be slow in coming. So thereby, because of this, steadfastness is required, and a refusal to relinquish the task simply because more tangible evidence is not appearing. So the only evidence of success may be slow in coming, for the sensitivity of the brain is involved, something we know little about, and certainly modern science knows little about it. And frequently there is very real success where there's very real success, the brain cells are not of the caliber which can register it. So we're always looking for evidence, we human beings, and we are cheered on by the evidence we see, which tells us our work has been effective. But in this very important higher type of work, we may not get that kind of evidence. The possible evidences at this stage may be a flash of the spiritual intuition, or the sudden realization of the will to good in a dynamic and group form. These kinds of fleeting, deep impressions may dawn and give us encouragement. It may also be simply an ability to understand and to make others understand certain spiritual and occult fundamentals. It may be a facility of revelation, both receptive and conditioning, to receive the revelation, or distributing revelation, and so world effective. Well, choose the way it has come to you, if it has come to you. If some evidence has come to you, which, if any of these possibilities, has is the evidence related to, or should we say, to which, of any, to which, of any of these possibilities is the evidence related, then we don't have to leave that dangling preposition. Excuse me. I'm attempting to make a very abstruse subject clear. Very subtle, very refined, very much outside the range of our normal thought processes, yet necessary if humanity is to move forward, DK has said. And so this effort of his to make it clear to us is very important, and it's very important that we attempt to absorb as clearly as possible what he is saying. And he is working at a disadvantage, as he frequently says, that words prove inadequate. I can but outline to you process and method and consequent hope for the future. And on your side, you can only experiment, obey, have confidence in the experience of those who teach, and then patiently wait for results. Well, what an important a sentence, really. What an important sentence. Worth repeating, right? I can but outline to you process and method and the consequent hope for the future. On your side, you can only experiment, obey. It's startling how many of the students, even the direct students of the disciple of the Tibetan, did not really obey with any faithfulness or continuity what he told them to do. What does it take? We may say to ourselves, oh, well, we would have been among those who truly obeyed, but you never know. It's certainly possible that one can have been overwhelmed by many types of circumstances and difficulties and would not have followed through. We'll get our chance, of course. You can only experiment, obey, have confidence in the experience of those who teach, namely, in this case, the Tibetan. Do we have that confidence? I think after all these years, I certainly have it, and I'm sure that if we ask ourselves, we will find that many of us do have that. We're not doubting him. He's proven himself in so many ways. And then wait patiently for results. This is what is required of us. So this is what is required of us. Okay. And when certain words come up, RQD, required. Okay, and why not even throw in another RQ for require? I do really enjoy having the abbreviations handy, and I'm sure that if you do some writing about these things, if you're a student in the Moria Federation, etc., you know, on your papers and so forth, it would be of use to you as well. All right. Let's move on. Here are the six stages of the building process. You kind of wonder about that number six. It's always antecedent to the number seven, which represents a kind of a climax. Everything hangs from the logoic plane, so to speak, and the six hang from the first, which is the seventh. I've employed six words to express this process and its resultant condition. He wants to lead us to results. It's obvious. DK wants to lead us to time-proven results. But will we cooperate? You know, at first, I thought, well, obviously everyone will cooperate, of course, because it's such a worthy consummation. But then when I found myself not even cooperating, I said, okay, the steadfastness required here is of an unusual order because we are not at all sure about what we're doing, and we have to work in the dark, and we have to proceed on faith and on the testimony of those we trust. Will we do it? It might prove useful to study them, these six, from the angle of their occult significance. Now, you know, what are the six? Intention, visualization, projection, invocation, evocation, stabilization, and resurrection. Those are the six, and if we memorize that sequence, we have something which indicates the liberative process in many respects. We're all interested in the resurrection. It is the seventh initiation, but it makes for a tremendous usefulness throughout the lower six planes. It's not an escape, although the Antikorana is sometimes considered a way of divine or occult escape. It's an escape to a position from which you can be even more useful in service. It might prove useful to study them from the angle of their occult significance, a significance which is not usually apparent except to the trained disciple who has been taught to penetrate into the world of meaning, and this world of meaning, the world of the soul, just the way the world of significance is the world of the triad, and the world of causes, well, either from the causal body or even from the logoic plane. So who are we? Are we the neophyte or are we the trained disciple? It seems that these are two simple words, trained disciple. But I think they imply a tremendous and consistent effort. And I wonder how many of us are really trained. We're told that the meek shall inherit the earth, and Alice Bailey goes to some length to explain the true meaning of the word meek, which means trained. In her view, the trained ones shall inherit the earth. So we are involved in occult training. Perhaps by the time we have investigated these words, the method of construction and the means whereby the Antikorana is built will appear with greater clarity. Now, I know many of us have read this over the years, studied it over the years. Though we have studied, are we clear about the process? And have we somewhat mastered it? That's the question. These words cover a building technique. Remember, the second ray is the building ray, and as is the seventh. But, you know, it's an intermediary kind of ridge, and it relates to the second ray. So the building technique, the building ray, the second, or a process of energy manipulation. This is a creative work. Manipulation is related to creativity. RTD, you can understand that requires related. Okay, manipulation is related to creativity, which brings into being a rapport between the monad and a human being who is aspiring towards full liberation in the monad, because you're not going to have full liberation before you are centered in the monad, and even then it's not full, in the monad, and is treading the path of discipleship and initiation. Maybe I better read that because I stopped too many times. These words cover a building technique or a process of energy manipulation, which brings into being a rapport between the monad. Let's remember, you know, in this latter book, The Rays and the Initiations, the monad is an objective, is a target. Monadic consciousness is a target. Between the monad and a human being who is aspiring towards full liberation and is treading the path of discipleship and initiation. The rules we follow in this book are rules for disciples and initiates. It can create a channel of light and life. Let's not only think of it as light, because it's part of the sutratma between the higher and lower divine aspects, and can produce a bridge between the spiritual life and the world of physical plane living. Now, the masters may deal with many things on the lower planes, but they work from such an elevation of consciousness that they see all within the context of the understanding produced by the spiritual triad, or by those the cities involved in the expression of the spiritual triad. And of those, the Tibetan has given us 11 of them, because one of the triadal expressions is still on the higher mental plane. And always the first and second plane of the Atmic and Buddhic levels are not given, because they are of too high a nature, and nothing of the subplane cities of the monad or that which is found on the logoic plane are given. They are far beyond our capability. So we are out to create that channel of light, living light, let's call it that. A channel of living light. And although the love aspect is not mentioned, it's obvious that when that channel exists, love for all beings, the sun, so to speak, S-O-N, is a natural emergence. It is a technique for producing the highest form of dualism and of eliminating the threefold expression of divinity. So that's why I said this Antikorana building is related to the technique of duality. Okay, so It produces the highest form of dualism, of which a human being is capable, and thereby intensifying the divine expression and bringing man nearer to his ultimate goal. What's his ultimate goal? Life as a monad upon the way of higher evolution. And that's another one of those ones that we want to fill it. So eventually, as a monad, we will be journeying towards other planets, other starry systems, eventually to the Pleiades and beyond. Disciples must always remember that soul consciousness is an intermediate stage, even though its full expression eludes us at this time. So we are really reaching high here, and the Tibetan has given us a high objective. It is also a process whereby, from the angle of the subhuman kingdoms and nature, humanity becomes the divine intermediary. We might say the number four. As the macrocosm. Okay, I think there's one for us, don't you think so? Maybe you can participate with me in finding them. Macrocosm. In becoming the macrocosm of the lower three kingdoms. And there's another one, isn't it? We can't let that pass, can we? KGS, and that is plural. Okay. Excuse me. And the transmitter of spiritual energy to those lives whose stages of consciousness are below that of self-consciousness. So man, the intermediary, the number four, the macrocosm for the lower kingdoms, his ability to work with the Antikarana facilitates this task. Working with the Antikarana facilitates man's macrocosmic relation to the lower three kingdoms. Humanity becomes to these lives, in their totality, what the hierarchy is to humanity. We always have to fulfill on a lower level that which has been granted to us. If we're a human being and a solar angel has intervened and facilitated our advancement, then many of us will become solar angels and do the same for the up-and-coming animal kingdom when it becomes human. This service only becomes possible when a sufficient number of the human race are or is distinguished by the knowledge of the higher duality and are increasingly soul conscious and not just self-consciousness. In other words, mediation requires more than just the strictly strictly human personal consciousness. Okay. Let's see, RQS requires. RQS requires. Okay. They can then make this transmission possible, and it is done by means of the Antikarana. So we might call the Antikarana, in a way, a channel for returning blessing. It's not only a way of escape, a way of attaining the higher worlds, it's a way of return. It's a way of bestowing upon that which we have left behind the blessings of the higher worlds. Okay, friends, I think I'm trying to keep these to about an hour. I'm listening carefully to the individual who is helping me by transcribing these videos into Word. Excuse me. and trying not to produce those five-hour programs. Although, one fine day, it may happen again. So this is the end of Rays and Initiations Webinar Commentary number 39. And, okay, and the day on which this is occurring is the 10th of January, 2017, and the beginning of Rays and Initiation Webinar Commentary number... Oh, I see that it's going to give me a little problem here. I've gone so far. Let's see. Maybe I just better try to find the number 39. Okay. And, oh, it's not going to allow me to do this. I know what I'll do. I'll do this. I'll put this down. Yeah. So this is the end of 39 and the beginning of Rays from page 483. If you can help me here, find the proper number. This is the problem with trying to do something a little bit on the spontaneous side, but in the long run, I think it does save time. Number 40. Okay, and let's see when... Do we begin that tonight here in Finland, or do we wait for another day? Let's just, okay, so it's page 483, which is where we began. And we'll look for, page 486 looks like, yeah, it is. So page 43 to 486. And there are lots of pages to come, of course. This is a big book. So in studying occultism in this manner, we have to be very patient. We have to plot along as the second ray type tends to do without leeway or let up, not crashing through the barriers as the first ray type does, but to be consistent, persistent, meticulous, going over every possible indicator of light. Of course, will we get everything out of it that is implied or expressed? Absolutely not. But we will open up certain filaments of relationship, of connection, and from them more light may result. Okay, appreciation for your presence, and we'll go on as best we can.